salary is the drug they give you when they want you to forget about your dreams.
Welcome to the Corporate Dropout Podcast. I'm your host, Alessia Citro. If you're sick of the corporate hamster wheel and looking to feel inspired and empowered to live a high vibe life as your own boss, you're in the right place. Dare to drop out in 3, 2, 1. Before we start the show, I want to tell you about the business I'm launching. Do you have a business idea, but you don't know where to start? Or maybe you've started your own business, but you know there are boxes you need to check when it comes to taxes, finance, legal protection, marketing, and more. Same. That's why I founded Thea Collective. Named for the Greek goddess of light, Thea was created to light the path for entrepreneurs. We have the community, courses, and connections that will help every entrepreneur quantum leap and avoid costly mistakes. Learn from experts across professions and get the blueprint you need for your business. Text BIZ, that's B-I-Z, to 949-577-8709 or head to thea-collective.com to learn more. Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Corporate Dropout Podcast. Today, I am interviewing Missy Mitchell. She is a modern mystic and a spiritual empowerment coach. She is also the host of the Spiritually Sourced podcast, which helps women learn how to lead a spiritual practice in everyday life, how to find inspiration, and how to live in accordance with their life's purpose. She's also a corporate dropout who has created a thriving business in her purpose and doing what she loves. Missy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for that intro. What a way to enter the interview. I love that.
Yeah, in doing the research before this, I was like, man, I knew that we were going to align and get along just from seeing your reels, which I think is how I found you late at night one night. And yeah, I'm so excited for this conversation because I think there's a lot of synergy here. So from listening to your show, I know you went through a pretty dark time before discovering your spiritual practices. Before we get into that, though, tell us what you were doing professionally before you became a corporate dropout and stepped into your work as a spiritual empowerment coach.
Yeah. So I was actually a beauty therapist, which I think you guys may call that an esthetician in the States. I'm not sure.
Yes. And tell everyone where you are, by the way.
Yeah. So I'm in Australia. If you can't pick up on my accent, I am based on the Sunshine Coast, which is in Queensland in Australia. So where it's very warm, very hot, very tropical. Think of like quintessential Australian beaches, and that's pretty much where I am. So I'm up here. But yeah, I was a beauty therapist, which, as I said, I think you guys do call an esthetician. There's been a bit of confusion with people asking me that before, so I made sure to look that up. So prior to doing what I'm doing now, that's the career that I was in.
And so I guess we'll just dive right into the meat. So you were sharing on this episode that I was listening to, you had some pretty major anxiety and depression, which is my story as well. It's really what prompted me to exit the corporate world. I just knew until I got in alignment and got out of that setting that I was going to keep having this problem. I would love to hear how you emerged from it and also more about that time and how it helped to get you back in alignment with what you were meant to be doing.
I love this question so much because I call it my magic dark, that period of my life. And I say that because yes, it was dark, but it truly did transpire to get me to where I am now, which is such a beautiful thing. So I hold so much gratitude for that time in my life, as hard as it was. And depression and anxiety was something that I had really experienced my whole life. Even as a young girl, I was, you know, a very anxious child, depressed child. And all throughout high school, it kind of peaked at the end there. And then I kind of picked myself up again after high school, you know, did the career thing and was really chasing that deeper sense of purpose, I think. And when I wasn't finding that from beauty therapy and, you know, what I was doing career-wise, I guess I plummeted back into that magic dark and that state of deep depression and anxiety. And it was quite severe for me. It got to the point where I couldn't work. I was struggling to even leave my bedroom. So when I say severe, it was a lot. It was a really, really difficult time in my life. But it was through that time that I began exploring spiritual modalities. So it started with yoga, which I think it does for a lot of people. You know, I think yoga really opens the door for a lot of people into spirituality. And from there, it went into meditation. And I started exploring with oracle cards and all of these different healing modalities. And I always say that, I mean, what I teach is like self and soul development. And that's kind of what I went into. It was all of the spiritual things, but it was also a heavy emphasis on self-development as well, and really diving into that. And it was through that that I became awakened, I guess, to this deeper sense of purpose that I held, and this deeper sense of wanting to be of service to other people, which I had always had. I just had never found something where I also felt fulfilled whilst being of service. And it's not like I set out to be a mentor or a coach or to even have my own business necessarily. It just was one of those beautiful, divinely guided things where I started, you know, really finding my flow with talking to people and teaching, and I found so much joy from it. And then I started to see the results that the people that I was teaching were getting, and I was like, hey, this is something, you know, this is something that I want to dive deeper into. And so that's exactly what I did, and that got me to where I am now, which is such a beautiful space that I hold so much gratitude every day for what I do.
Well, it's just so fulfilling, to your point, to be serving other people, but also to be re-energized from that service. Because most of the time, at least in, you know, our westernized societies, it's not that way. We're giving, 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 and not receiving anything. So I think it's so beautiful that you have that in balance.
Yeah. To me, that's one of the most important things. I think when we step into this realm, we think of soul purpose, and we think of that having to be a specific career or a specific way of living that out. And to me, soul purpose is truly being of service whilst feeling fulfilled. That is what it is. And that modality will change, the way that that is channeled through will change, but that is the most important thing that we can come back to, in my opinion, within this space.
Yes. Oh, I love it so much. So I'm going to quote your website, and I'm going to swear. So if you have small kids in the car, maybe turn the volume down for a second. Your website says that you were, I'm going to quote here, "I was in a strong victim mentality," all caps, "until I remembered who the fuck I was." Ugh. So powerful. I feel like there are so many people who have forgotten their true nature and who they are. We've been domesticated, so to speak. What's your advice for the person who is ready to remember who they are and to step into that power? How can they go about doing that?
To me, the greatest thing that we can do to step into our own power is cultivate a deep sense of self-awareness and self-knowing, and really leading into self-mastery in that regard. So it all starts from within, and understanding who you are and why you are the way that you are, the things that trigger you, the things that, you know, make you feel certain ways, and understanding how you can come back to your like core truth, as I call it, or soul. I kind of use that interchangeably. Understanding that we are all an incredible soul living this human experience. And yeah, to simple that down, self-awareness is 100% the most important thing that you could be doing on this journey. Because when you have that self-awareness, like I said, it leads to self-mastery, and that's where you really begin to understand your power.
I was on a retreat this past weekend with a bunch of women, and we were sharing a lot of, you know, really deep, I was going to say deep and dark. It wasn't all dark, but some of it was. And we were talking about triggers, and I was sharing with them, I've been doing a ton of inner work. I was sharing with them that one of the things I've learned is that when you get triggered, that's like where the gold is. And it's like, why? Like, why is that triggering me? And when there's a person who triggers you, or maybe you just don't jive with them for whatever reason, I believe it's because there's something about them that you have in you that you don't like. What are your thoughts on that? And how do you think people can go about digging into these triggers more to be liberated, so to speak?
I think you covered it really beautiful, but to like summarize that is to ask the question, why? Keep asking why. If you do find yourself triggered, don't just sit in that trigger and wallow in that and, you know, place blame or anything like that. Bring it back to you and ask yourself, why is this making me feel that way? Where do I think this stems from? And why does that stem from that? Get really curious with yourself. And, you know, that's where self-awareness starts. It's by asking those questions. It's about diving deeper into who you are. And I definitely agree that, you know, triggers are where the gold lies, because it allows us to understand where we are living out of our truth almost, because our truth is our power, right? Our power is our truth. And so when we are feeling triggered, when we are in that state of victim mentality, we aren't standing in our power. And so asking ourselves that question of why am I feeling this way is going to lead back to that inner truth and back to that inner power. So that would be such a power. Like if you're starting on this and you're starting on doing the inner work and starting on understanding yourself, why is the most powerful thing that you could be asking yourself?
The coach I'm working with shared with me that if you ask a question, your brain has to provide an answer. Mm-hmm. So if you're not getting the answers you want, it's a matter of asking better questions. And I thought that was pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. Most people probably aren't stopping to even ask why, maybe because it's painful to unearth, but it's so necessary.
And I think sometimes we can be... This isn't about placing blame on ourselves either on this process. It's just about self-exploration and understanding. But I think we can be so conditioned to blame external forces for the way that we're feeling. And that's not taking away from like people's lived experiences, but you know, we often don't want to take the responsibility for how we're feeling, knowing that we do have power over that. And that, you know, ultimately we can decide how we want to feel and how we want to react, or whether we want to react or respond to certain situations and, you know, external forces outside of us. So I think that can be a really difficult thing to come to terms with, is that radical sense of self-responsibility. And I think especially as women and those who identify as women, we often have, you know, this white knight syndrome where we think that we're going to have someone swoop in and save us and, you know, fix everything in our lives. And I know that I definitely had that mentality, and it was a sharp knock to the ego when I discovered, oh, hang on, no, like I have to take responsibility for myself and this lies within me. And, you know, that can be scary for a moment, but when you can shift your perspective to looking at that as something to be fearful of and shifting into something that where you hold so much power, knowing that you do hold that power within you to create and live the way that you want to live, that's where you start really tapping into the magic.
I could not agree more. I'm not a big Joe Rogan fan, mostly because his episodes are too long. But I was told by my coach actually to listen to the interview that he did with Jewel, which is almost 4 hours long. It took me a few days to get through it, but it is so powerful. Like everyone listening to this, well, I don't use the word should, I'm trying not to, but I invite you to go listen to that interview. But one of the things that Jewel talks about, she was homeless for a while, and she had this realization. One day she just looked in a mirror and was like, no one's coming. If I want to change this, I have to change it. And so that can be really hard sometimes, depending on the circumstances. Like for better or for worse, you created your reality, but having the ownership of that can be such a powerful thing when we frame it that way, I think.
I'll have to listen to that. That it might take me a few days as well, but it's so incredibly powerful when you tune into that and can see it as a source of power rather than a source of disempowerment, I guess, and really acknowledging who, like I say on my website, who the fuck you are, because you are incredibly powerful and we all have that within us. Like there's, you know, I think sometimes people hear these stories and you can think that they've had special circumstances or whatever handed to them, but truly that's not the case. Like it's a sense of deep empowerment that comes from within, and that comes from that understanding and, you know, having discipline with yourself as well, which is incredibly important.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. I feel like this is a good segue into shadow work. So you have a course called Soul Shadow, which as I was reading through it, I was like, I'm so into this stuff. I need to sign up. So feel free to plug it. But this is something, you know, this concept of shadow work, most people haven't even heard of this. And they're probably like, what are you two talking about? I'm newly familiar with it myself and still learning a lot. But can you tell us more about that? What is it and how can it help us step into our best version of ourselves?
So I guess we've kind of just skimmed over the surface of what shadow work is, because essentially it's looking at the parts of ourselves that we have tried to keep in the dark. It's really, I call it like facing our shit head on and really looking at it and being like, okay, I'm going to work through this and I am going to understand why I'm being triggered and what my conditioning is around, you know, my life. And shadow work is so incredibly powerful because it leads to that understanding, and it brings us back to that sense of inner power through really shifting through the many layers that we have. It's quite interesting. And for those who are completely new to this, you know, from the ages of 0 to 7, we are little sponges that just absorb everything that is happening around us. And that's when most of our beliefs of the world are formed, you know, about ourselves, about our external world. And, you know, going back into that and rewiring that allows us to begin to break through our self-limiting beliefs and those shadow thoughts that we may have about ourselves or our place in the world to really begin to cultivate this beautiful life. So, you know, not only does it bring that deep sense of power, but it is an incredible opportunity to begin manifesting as well and understand that we truly are capable of creating our own reality, no matter what that looks like. So, you know, to put it simply, it's really facing your shit and moving through it, essentially.
Do you think it's also a matter of appreciating the polarity, perhaps? Like I was reading something today and it was saying, you know, if you didn't meet an introvert, how would you know you were an extrovert? It's like those things you don't like, they help you appreciate what you do like as well. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something that you encompass as you work through this?
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes into that understanding that everybody is so different. And then everybody, you know, this goes back to what I was saying before. We all have like a core truth. We all have a very unique soul that we come into this lifetime with. And we are all incredibly multifaceted. And I think the more exposure we have to, like you say, that polarity, the more that we can become aware of what our unique powers are and what other people's unique power is, you know. And I think that was such a pivotal moment on my own journey of understanding that the things that I once viewed as weaknesses, for example, I'm an incredibly deep thinker. I don't skim the surface with anything. I go deep on everything in life. And I once viewed that as a weakness. And, you know, once I began to see a different way of seeing that in a different perspective and showing how much that could help other people and to look at the polarity of things, I was like, hang on, this is like a superpower. So definitely it exposes you to a different way of being and a different way of interacting with other people. It also leads to a deep sense of compassion for everyone around you, because you do begin to understand that, you know, we all are acting from this space of conditioning and default until we move through that. And it becomes a lot easier to, like I said, interact with other people, knowing that that's where they're coming from. And it leads to not only an understanding of yourself, but an understanding of others and how we are all so different, which I think is an incredibly powerful tool, especially in the world that we're living in now, you know, where there is so much immediate judgment with things like social media. And, you know, we always have access to it, and just allows you to take a step back and be like, hang on, you know, the biggest saying is hurt people hurt people. And, you know, doing that work allows you to really understand the meaning behind that saying.
I could not agree more. Just like underscoring the piece of the subconscious mind also, and how everything gets programmed by the time you turn 7. I heard this put so beautifully, I forget where now, I wish I could give credit, but it was that basically you could be the exact same genetic makeup, born to the same parents, but let's say, you know, I was born in Iowa, grew up in Southern California. I could have been born to the same parents, but in Saudi Arabia. And how different would I be because of all of those beliefs and programming that I would have had that are different? So I agree with you. I feel like once we sort of wrap our heads around that piece, we're all so much more alike than we give credit for. And it just helps you to have a lot more patience for people, which I'm not that patient of a person, but I'm growing every day. but yeah, I agree. It really helps you have that deep compassion.
Absolutely. The way that I look at it, you know, like I said before, is like we have this core within us, and then there's the layers that get added as we go through this human experience. And at our core, we are all of the, like, to get really woo-woo on everybody, we are these beautiful light beings that we call souls that are full of like love, compassion, all of the high vibe, I say that in quotation marks, emotions and energies. And it's you know, doing the process of shadow work is about moving through those layers to come back to that core and understanding that we all have that core within us. So just to, you know, break that down even more, that's how I visually kind of see it.
Beautifully put. So shifting gears a little bit, one of the courses you offer is called You Are the Channel, and you teach people how to channel and connect with spirit as well as with self. I totally believe everything that you're saying. Like, we're spiritual beings who chose to come here and have this physical experience. And I'm also cognizant that so many of us are closed off to that power. Like, I'm just starting to peel back the layers of the onion to reconnect with mine. But tell us a little bit about how someone can channel. What does that mean? What does that look like? Because this is a pretty powerful gift that you discovered that you have as well.
And everyone can do it. Absolutely everybody. That I'm a very, very firm believer. I don't think that there are people born with special gifts. I think everybody has this. It's just a matter of coming back to that core truth and understanding how it's delivered, because channeling will look so different for everybody. I mean, we have the traditional sense of channeling where, you know, it is spirit speaking through you. But to me, channeling also occurs when I'm jumping on and teaching a class. You know, you go into that beautiful flow state where you forget time. Most of the time I forget what I'm saying, because it is just literally channeling through. You know, you can discover that when you're journaling. It happens in so many different ways for everyone. But the biggest tip that I can give to people is to get quiet. Get quiet with yourself. Whether that means meditating, which I know a lot of people struggle with, or whether it means going for a walk in nature, not listening to a music, not listening to a podcast, not talking with a friend, simply being in nature and sitting in that silence, that is when we begin to really become aware of the energies that are around us and within us and what we are able to channel through us. So, you know, without going into like a deep dive into it, that would be my number one advice, is to get quiet. And it's something many of us do not do. Again, we live in this age where, you know, our phone is always there, and it's almost like a default to go immediately onto that when we don't, you know, when we're not working, when we're not doing something. And so I really urge everybody to get quiet with themselves and to see what comes through. Another practical piece of advice would be to, after having that process of getting quiet with themselves, is to sit down and journal and just free flow and see what comes through. You would be amazed at how much your conscious mind steps to the side, and when you can let yourself go with journaling, what will come through and what will be channeled through you.
How did you start out journaling? Because, and I'm asking this because so many people, I think, are intimidated by the practice, because they just picture in their mind that it has to be this long drawn out thing where they're sitting there for 30 minutes. How did that practice start for you?
So I actually started with gratitude and affirmations, which I think is an opening space for a lot of people. It's still a practice that I have to this day. I've done it every day for the last 3 or 4 years. It is so incredibly powerful, but it would just start off with, I am grateful for, listing 3 things and then 3 affirmations. Now I can write an entire page, right? When I first started in that darker place, it was actually an incredibly difficult process to tap into. But I think this is something where self-discipline really comes into it, and creating those habits and those routines that really serve you, and committing to yourself really serves you. But that would be a place to start. And I mean, there are so many fantastic journals on the market now that have prompts in them that guide you through it, that will, you know, really will have questions to ask yourself. But if you were just wanting to start somewhere, I would start with the gratitude and the affirmations. The other question that I will often get people to ask themselves is, what does my higher self want me to know today? And see what comes through, and let yourself release any pressure on what that has to look like, on how it's going to come through. It could be 1 word, it could be 2. You could end up writing a page, but you don't know until you do it. So really allowing yourself to remove the pressure from that practice is incredibly important. But they're just a few little prompts that you can definitely start with.
So I have a follow-up question to this, which might sound a little bit weird. You were talking about, you know, what would my higher self want, you know, me to know today or do today, whatever it might be. I'm curious, when you just, do you still have an inner critic, or have you learned to kind of keep it at bay?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, this is something that I'm really passionate about teaching, especially when, you know, you are a mentor and you are guiding other people. I don't want there to ever be this notion that mentors are like these enlightened beings that, you know, move through their life perfectly. The way that I see it, you are constantly evolving and expanding. And as you do so, there are going to be those self-limiting beliefs that are going to come up, because you're stepping into unknown territory. So what doesn't, like the fear and the self-limiting beliefs don't change. It's the way that you navigate them and the way that you interact with them. And that is such an important part of what I teach to my clients is how to work with fear and how to work with those self-limiting beliefs so that they don't hold you back, because they will always be there, because we are constantly growing. We're constantly expanding. We're constantly stepping into a new level of our potential. Well, hopefully we are anyway. And you know, that comes with it a new set of challenges and a new set of beliefs that you're going to face. So it's an ongoing work. And I think that can sometimes discourage people, but I see it as a really beautiful self-exploration. And I always say that healing isn't a destination. It is constant self-exploration. And I think, again, that takes the pressure of it. And that's why, you know, practices of being in the moment and gratitude are so incredibly important, because it keeps us deeply rooted in place, but also knowing that it's okay to want to continue expanding and evolving and doing all of the different things. But definitely I still have that inner critic. I have a name for her. Like it's this relationship that I've formed with it, knowing that, yes, it's within me, but it's not my truth.
I started laughing because that was going to be my follow-up to the follow-up is, have you named it? Yep. I forget where I heard this, but that was the advice, personify it. So what's the name of your inner critic? I have to know.
So mine is Felicia. You're willing to share. Oh, of course. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Mine's Felicia, because I love the bye Felicia. Like that's, I like go into it with humor. It helps me like lighten it up a little bit. So it's something that this is something that I get all of my clients to do as well, is to give your inner critic a name. And I make mine funny because it helps remind me like, oh, hang on, like, no, Felicia's not my truth. She's just popping in from time to time. Do you know what I mean? So definitely yeah. give them a name. It makes a huge difference.
My husband and I were having this conversation yesterday because he's a high achiever and, you know, self-critical too. And I was like, you need to name the inner critic. And he's like, what's the name of yours? And no offense to anyone listening with this name, but I said, mine's named Pam. And it makes me laugh every time, like, oh, hey, Pam, like, it's almost like the devil on the shoulder and the angel on the other. Mm-hmm. I have like highest self on one shoulder and Pam on the other. So
yeah. Definitely. This is a really interesting subject as well, is don't only name like your inner critic, but I also give names to the different parts of my higher self personified. And this is something else that I get my clients to do. So I have a part of me that I call Send It Missy. And that's the Missy that comes through when I really have to stand in my confidence, when I'm doing something very out of my comfort zone, where, you know, I've really got to step into that inner power. And then I'll have like a gentle part of me, a sensual part of me. It helps embody that energy in a different way with your higher self as well. Obviously with the inner critic, we're just wanting to tell them to, sorry for my explicit language, fuck off. But when we want to embody our higher self, it's so important to also have that. So it's almost like you're putting on this character. So when you're not really feeling it, it's like, okay, hang on, let me put this character on today. Let me embody that. And that's going to help me move forward with that energy. So that's a really good, a few different techniques to use in regards to giving yourself these different almost like personas, I guess.
Yes. And, you know, I learned recently about different archetypes that we women have. There's the hunter, or the huntress rather, the nurturer, the lover, and then the queen embodies all of them. So it sounds like that's sort of another way of putting what you had just said, but coming up with actual names versus like huntress sounds kind of aggressive.
Yeah. And I think, you know, archetypes are such a beautiful thing to work with, but the names won't always resonate with you. Like you said, huntress sounds a bit intense. For some people, that might be like, oh no, but that it's the energy behind that. So they may think of a different name for it that, you know, resonates with them on a deeper level. So it's just understanding and acknowledging that you have all of these different parts of you within and finding the ways of how you can embody that.
Yeah. Great advice. So going back to the channeling piece a little bit, there was something that I had heard on your podcast, and it was that as you got into meditation and yoga, you were hearing voices. And I'm kind of laughing because, you know, people say, oh, I hear voices. And it's like, well, maybe you need medication or something, right? that's what we've been conditioned to think of, right? Mm-hmm. And you had said that it was your spirit guides connecting with you and you to them. So for those who haven't heard this concept of spirit guides, can you talk a little bit about that and also what it was like connecting with them and how you knew that that's what it was?
I mean, spirit guides are beings in the spirit world that are here to guide us on our human experience. And, you know, they can be angels, they can just be guides, they can be past loved ones. They take many different forms, but it's basically like a light energy. So when I think of a spirit guide, I think of pure loving guidance is the energy that they embody. And when that first came through, it was pure love entering my system. And to kind of paint the picture for this and why I lent into it so far, like anyone who's experienced anxiety, you know the feeling within your body. Now think of having that anxiety 24/7 to the point of having 3 or 4 panic attacks a day. Imagine what that would feel like within your body. That's the state that I was in. So this concept of relaxation was near impossible for me at this stage. And when I first started channeling, when I had that first experience in that meditation, it was like someone had dropped like a warm liquid into my body and everything relaxed, everything, which to me felt almost, I don't want to use the word miracle, but almost. And, you know, when you're in such a heightened state of anxiety 24/7, that was just pure relief. And I was like, that, where did that come from? And what was that? And that voice came through so clearly that I almost couldn't doubt it. I couldn't doubt what was coming through. And don't get me wrong, there still was a part of me like, what just happened? But I lent into that. And I think that has been one of the biggest things on my journey with it, was that I was so open to it. And I think it really depends on where you are in being open to this. I mean, I'm quite fortunate to have grown up in a household where, you know, my mum would take me to see psychics. My mum has always had tarot cards in our house. You know, my auntie, my nan, everyone has always been somewhat open to this. So I didn't have any conditioning around it that made me question it a lot. I mean, I definitely questioned it, but not as much as some other people would. I also think that I was in such a low state that I was open to anything that was going to help me. So as soon as I felt that, I was like, what was that? Give me some more, because that was amazing. And so that really allowed me to explore it on a deeper level. So yeah, it's this interesting thing with spiritual practices where I think everybody has a different starting point in how open they are to it.
Especially if you came up, you know, in a really religious household where there's a lot of dogma and maybe shame around, like I have my altar over here in the corner with, you know, energy crystals and an old Bible and rosary. But initially I was like, oh, you know, oh my gosh, is this okay that I have these things commingled? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think holding space for wherever you're at in the journey and just staying open is probably the way to begin that journey.
Definitely. And the way that I always look at it with either like skepticism or that kind of approach to spirituality is if it's helping you become a better person and it's helping you on your journey and it's not hurting anybody else in that process, then why not be open to it?
Totally. I think it's Abraham Hicks that puts it this way, that you should follow your bliss. If it feels good, and to your point, it's not hurting anyone and it's not hurting you, I mean, yeah, why not? As we sit here, I'm holding my Labradorite crystal. I set it down for a moment, but I love it. You got any going over there?
Got my huge amethyst geode next to us.
I love it. Yeah. Well, that was one thing I wanted to ask you about too. So I know that you have been an energy crystals lover for a long time. You said since you were a child, which is so cool because I just learned about all of these not that long ago. I'm curious, what are your favorite crystals and what do you use them for?
So Labradorite's probably one of my favorites. I love using that in meditation. I'll put it on my solar plexus chakra. So like on my diaphragm, I guess is where I would, like on your stomach. I love using that. Probably my all-time favorite is amethyst and rose quartz. So ever since I was a little girl, they've been my two, you know, go-tos. I don't know. There's just something about their energy that I just love. I mean, rose quartz is the stone of love and opening your heart space. And amethyst has just always held such a mystical, almost like a fairy-like energy for me, which when I was a kid, you know, that was something that I really resonated with. And I guess, you know, there's that sense of nostalgia with the energy of that stone as well. But Crystals are really interesting, and I think there's no right or wrong way to use them, which is a common misconception. It's truly about using your intuition and picking the ones that you're drawn to and trusting that and, you know, placing them wherever feels right for you and exploring that. So that would be, if I could give anyone advice with crystals, it's follow what feels right for you and don't think that there's a right or a wrong way to use them.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. A lot of this stuff, because it is kind of woo-woo and not what a lot of people grew up with, they're just very intimidated by it. But just, mm-hmm. yeah, pick the one that you're drawn to and just set an intention with it is what I do. And yeah, it's been super fun. I'm also obsessed with rose quartz, by the way. I have it everywhere. I'm just so drawn to it. So
yeah, it's my fave.
Whatever you're drawn to is what you need, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So my final question for you, there are so many people in the world right now, especially just with all we've gone through the last 2 years and just this reinvention that so many of us are going through and all the upheaval. I feel like there are so many people who are feeling really lost or lacking purpose. What advice would you give to the person listening that is ready to discover that purpose and live it out?
My advice would be commit to yourself first and foremost, because your purpose is going to be uncovered the more that you commit to yourself and the more that you understand and uncover the parts within yourself that you may not have explored yet. So, you know, committing to yourself. I'm big on having practical tools. I never want to come on here and just be like woo-woo and be like, here's a fun saying for you, but not actually giving you anything practical to go with that. So, you know, committing to yourself, start forming routines that serve you, you know, get clear on the life that it is that you want to be living and reverse engineer that life to where you are now to see the steps that you have to take towards that. Begin cultivating that really beautiful relationship with yourself with some of the tools and the practices that we spoke about today. You know, it comes with that commitment to yourself. One of my favorite sayings is discipline equals freedom. It was Jocko Willink. I don't know if you've heard of him. And it's so true. You know, having that discipline with ourselves to commit to ourselves leads to that freedom of understanding our purpose and having this life that we want to create. So that would be my advice, is commit to yourself.
I love that. And actually, I have a follow-up. I know I said that was the final question, but I have to ask you this one too. Speaking of committing to yourself and routines and establishing good habits, tell us a little bit about your morning routine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My morning routine is my favorite thing. So I love talking about this.
Oh, good. I had a feeling. I just can vibe it.
I am an extreme morning person, which not everybody will be. So if you're listening to this, please do not think that you have to get up at the same time that I do. I'm aware that it sounds insane, but I get up at 4:30 every morning, knowing that I also go to bed at 8:30 at night. So just putting that into perspective. I'll get up at 4:30. I'll make myself a cup of tea. I'll either go down to the beach or sit on my balcony. I live on waterfront, so I like being able to see water or nature when I do this. I'll do my gratitude, my affirmations. Like I said, they've been a huge part of my morning routine for the past 4 years. I'll do some visualization. So I'll close my eyes and embody the energy that I want to take into that day with me. And that's about it. Like, it's not this huge routine that I do. I'm an afternoon exerciser, but I definitely think moving your body every single day is important. But just having that time where you have committed to yourself each and every day is so incredibly important. I will also meditate most days as well, even if it is just for 10 minutes. But just having that space where you have committed to yourself and you've embodied the feelings of feeling good is such a powerful way to start your day. And I always say that morning routines, they're not just about the practices that you're doing, which absolutely help set you up for an incredible day. You're more likely to, you know, face challenges, more level-headed and within your power, but they're also showing you that commitment to yourself over time. And when you can do that, you're more likely to then follow through on all of the other habits that you're wanting to form, because you've already showed yourself that you can commit to yourself. So it works on so many different levels. That's why I think having a morning routine is so incredibly important, and why I am devoted to mine. It's an integral part of my day. But they are like my non-negotiables. Some days I'll add in pulling an Oracle card for myself or, you know, something along those lines, going for a walk, listening to a podcast. There'll often be in some stage of my day, an area of education where I am listening to a podcast or I am watching a YouTube video or I'm listening to an audiobook or I'm watching part of a course that I'm in. These are all really strong foundations, I think, for living a life where you are standing in your power and you are creating, you know, this dream life that you're wanting to have, and you're remembering that you do have the strength to create that. So yeah, that's my routine.
Yeah. And you know, I like the fact that you keep it pretty simple and then you add on more if you have time, where I think a lot of people can go off the rails, myself included. I was big on the miracle morning till my daughter's sleep schedule changed, but it was like an hour long process where it sounds like this could be if you have time, but it could also be condensed and shortened and still have a really positive effect.
This is something that I see a lot. It's almost like this pressure to perform, which is the complete opposite of what you want your morning routine to be. You don't want it to be an added chore that you've got to do. And so what I always recommend to people is having different tools in your toolkit that you know serve you. So journaling, meditation, gratitude affirmations, having these different things and asking yourself each day, what is going to make me feel good today? And having the discipline with yourself to follow through on that. And yes, if you have time, if you have 2 hours in the morning, do it all. Incredible. Amazing. But you know, if you've got kids or you've got to get to work, whatever it might be, just start with what is going to make me feel good. What do I have time for? Being really honest with yourself of what you've got time for, making it a priority. And start with that, knowing that you don't have to get it all done. Because I think a lot of people are faced with this, oh my gosh, I can't get all of that done, so I'm not going to do any of it. They go into total overwhelm, which is defeating the purpose, right? So it's starting small and being like, okay, what is going to serve me best in this moment? Let me start with that. And making it a priority to spend at least, even if it's 10 minutes, and then you can grow from there. But that's been a really powerful thing that I've seen a lot of my clients introduce, is asking themselves that question and relieving that pressure of having it as an added chore and remembering that it's something to make you feel good.
Yes. Such good points and call outs. This was so wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. And before we sign off, how can listeners connect with you? How can they work with you, and anything else that you want to share?
Thank you so much for having me on. This was amazing. I love being on podcasts, so thank you so deeply. I'm very active on Instagram, so you can find me at I Am Mystic Missy. That is probably the best way to find me. My website is spirituallysourced.com. At the moment, as we mentioned, I do have my course Soul Shadow, which is open for enrollment, where we do go deep into shadow work. That's one of my signature programs, something that is continually growing as we move through it as well. So that is where you can find me. And you can also find my podcast as well, Spiritually Sourced. It's on Apple, Spotify, all of the usual places where you can find podcasts.
Well, thank you so much again. I really enjoyed this, and I'm looking forward to our mini episode on a business tip that will drop tomorrow.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by Thea Collective, the learning community I founded for entrepreneurs. Text biz, that's B-I-Z, to 949-577-8709, or head to thea-collective.com. That's theia-collective.com to learn more. Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, please help me get the word out about The Corporate Dropout by screenshotting and sharing this on social. I would appreciate it so much if you would subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review as well. And I do this show for you, and I want to hear from you. So tell me, what is it that you want more of? Text me at 949-541-0951 or slide into the DMs at Corporate Dropout Official or Alicia Citro with 2 underscores. Until next time. Next time.